Now, on to our presenters. John Jackson has 30 years of experience leading the recovery business at Comdisco, HP, IBM, and others, and is a well-known expert in the field of business continuity. Welcome to our webcast, John.
Thank you, Tom.
John, I know that companies have slowly been changing the way they approach business continuity. Can you tell us how the landscape is changing and what that means to companies today?
That's a great question, Tom, because an important aspect of looking forward in our industry is reflecting on where we've come from over the years, as the industry has evolved significantly with time. To set the stage for my comments, I'd like to take a minute and reaffirm all of our perspectives on two industry standard terms. These terms get used a lot, by many folks, but I am not sure they really get defined. It's important because these measures are of increasing importance today, actually more important today than ever before. First is recovery time objective, or RTO. This is a measurement of how quickly the recovery must take place. It starts when the actual disaster or interruption occurs, and ends when the interrupted systems or business functions are restored to an operable state, regardless of the current state of the data or information. I say regardless because in some cases, just getting the systems or business unit back into operation allows some critical functions to be supported. Generally, the more static the data, the more accurate the data will be. This brings us to recovery point objective, the second and equally important measure. Recovery point objective is a measurement of how current the data or information needs to be once the systems are back in operation. Traditionally, companies worried more about RTO because the focus was more on enabling the hardware than restoring the systems. But that has taken a dramatic turn for most organizations in the past years. RPO is application dependent, as some applications have different change rates than others, and therefore the frequency of backup differs in order to make the data usable. Technology has affected RPO more than RTO, as a lot of new software and hardware solutions are focused on mirroring or replication of data, directly impacting RPO and supporting RTO as a byproduct. We will use these terms today, so I thought a refresher on their definitions was important. An important aspect of looking forward in our industry is reflecting on where we've come from, as the industry has evolved significantly with time. This industry started in earnest in the late 70s, as SunGard, followed by Comdisco, entered into the disaster recovery hot site business. The issue existed before that, honestly dating back to the inception of data processing equipment. But as an industry, it started in about 1979. The focus back then was on the data center, mainframe-based in most organizations, and folks thought having a disaster recovery capability was all about finding compatible hardware, getting the operating systems and program products up and running, note I didn't say applications, and back into a usable state. Systems programmers did most of this work. I know, as I was one, and did it myself. Limited network focus existed, and limited applications focus also. Just get the infrastructure back up and running was the mantra early on. In the 1980s, there was a shift in the industry that, quite frankly, should always have been there. That being a focus on critical applications, in addition to hardware and software. This shift brought about a lot more focus on the backup and restore process for the applications and significantly expanded the testing of disaster recovery programs as customers needed to restore the data and get business users involved in verification. The 80s also saw expansion of disaster recovery programs to address mid-range or departmental systems, most often involving IBM AS400, DEC, HP and Sun systems. This expansion forced the hot site vendors to evolve their hardware platform options to cover the growth into mid-range systems. As we moved into the 1990s, we saw expansive changes in the disaster recovery industry. First, many companies realized that if the end-user working environment was affected and business people couldn't access the recovered technology, or if the disaster only impacted the user area, a whole new type of recovery solution was required, which gave birth to work area or end-user recovery solutions. Initially, this was no more than tables and chairs, set up in a bullpen environment with telephone and terminal access to the IT systems. Later variations on this offering involved cubicles, trading floors, and ancillary capabilities like mailing, shipping, copying, and bulk printing. In addition to work area solutions, the 90s saw the first solutions to address electronic data protection, as companies saw their recovery time requirements shortening and realized the time to manually restore tapes would not allow them to meet their RTO. Finally, the issue of people availability became an important aspect of companies' planning, as people realized that if staff were not available, the recovery process would be seriously impacted. Finally, we enter the new millennium, which is on course to change the industry once again. So far in the 2000 to 2006 timeframe, we have seen several major shifts take place. First, the movement from shared hot sites to dedicated or internal solutions. I define internal solutions as those where an organization provides its own recovery, not including a vendor's involvement. Dedicated, on the other hand, involves a vendor providing the service, but in a non-shared mode. This is a major trend that shows no let-up and will significantly change the vendor landscape. Second, new critical applications are being supported, which has spawned a new set of recovery solutions. Most specifically, email and instant messaging have come to the forefront of people's critical application list, as those technologies are mandatory parts of how we communicate and conduct business today. Third, there is a significant focus on crisis management and emergency management programs and plans, in addition to the traditional disaster planning process. I expect to see much more in this area. And last but not least, the regulatory climate has changed significantly as companies focus on the many new regulations and how corporate governance programs are impacting how people think about and address the whole movement to resiliency. As the industry has evolved, so has the business management attention to it and focus on it by senior management. IT and line-of-business leadership in organizations is being driven by a new set of CEO priorities. In this recent survey by Gartner, over 950 CEOs were canvassed, CEOs of companies of all different sizes and industries. Out of the four major CEO goals, it is interesting that two of them, managing risk and increasing profitability, are reflective of the whole continuity issue. Managing risk is obvious, but also a well-thought-through and executed continuity program ensures that profitability is maintained. Honestly, you could also make a case for revenue, not necessarily growing, but certainly being protected as an outcome. One thing is for certain. In today's day and age, disasters or other disruptive events are a normal way of life for organizations. Just look at this list and think about these and all of the other events around the world, as well as at home. The 2005 hurricane season, the ongoing threat of terrorism, and the pending pandemic all illustrate that events can and will happen. In a recent survey that Continuity Insights magazine and KPMG just completed, 49% of the 935 respondents said they had an event that required invoking their recovery plan in the past year. The three reasons that topped the list were power, hardware, and natural disasters. It is important to note that events may be positive in nature, not just discontinuities, and a resilient infrastructure needs to handle positive events as well as negative ones. Liebert recently commissioned a survey of IT, facilities, and business continuity professionals through Continuity Insights magazine about power and cooling infrastructures as well as business continuity. Here's a look at the results when they were asked for their recovery time objectives and recovery point objectives. If you ignore the don't knows, you can see that the majority have RPOs and RTOs which are under 2 hours. This was confirmed in the KPMG study and several actual studies I have done over the years. Today, more than 50% of companies need sub-48-hour recovery times, and my experience says 90-plus percent of those are actually sub-24-hour. To me, that indicates a significant movement, and actually requirement for dedicated recovery solutions and mirrored storage. There is no way to achieve sub-2-hour recovery without a dedicated environment and mirrored storage. The KPMG study also indicated that 1 out of 3 companies was unable to attain their RTO in actual recoveries, a very concerning statistic. So, the need to accurately assess your IT infrastructure, which protects your critical systems, is paramount to business continuity and ensuring the availability and integrity of your data and networks. I see the lowest RPOs in financial services and healthcare organizations, but RTOs and RPOs are trending downward across all industries. We hear a lot about the term resilience as the current stage of disaster recovery and business continuity programs. The American Heritage Dictionary defines resilience as the property of a material that enables it to resume its original shape or position after being bent, stretched, or compressed. We certainly can apply that notion of flexibility and adaptability to organizations. Let me give you my definition of business resilience. Resilience within an organization is achieved when the business is capable of anticipating and responding to market, customer, competitive, and internal changes, and absorbs and adapts to change in a way that maintains or accelerates business performance and flow. As you can see on the slide, there are 6 key points that summarize business resilience: ensuring survival, protecting brand and reputation, positioning for change and taking advantage of it, supporting innovation, maintaining governance and regulatory obligations, and finally, ensuring that bureaucracy does not get in the way of progress. Okay, now that we have business resilience defined, let's drop down one level and discuss IT resilience. IT resilience is a growing trend in the industry that involves the convergence of 4 disciplines: disaster recovery, business continuity, security, and production high availability. I define IT resilience in the following way. IT resilience supports business resilience by allowing the organization to accomplish, communicate, respond, and sustain business operations in the face of positive and negative stressors. It is the evolution from a protected to an adaptive infrastructure, capable of meeting the organization's capacity, access, performance, and availability requirements. Specifically, IT resilience is about 6 actions: ensuring the availability to be responsive, making sure transaction flow continues, maintaining systems and infrastructure flexibility, taking advantage of change, addressing security and privacy issues, and being anticipatory and predictive in nature. Achieving resilience in your organization involves 6 major pieces. Those 6 components are staff, critical applications and business processes, local and wide area networks, computer systems and related equipment, the facilities and their infrastructure, and finally, plans and processes. It's important that these six pieces mesh together to form a unified strategy, with data and applications as the centerpiece. Today, there is a lot of focus on the facilities and infrastructure component, as more and more organizations focus on keeping the IT systems available 100% of the time, and building recovery and continuity into their worlds, rather than tacking it on, as we've done in the past. I break the critical components of infrastructure down into four pieces, which are power management, environmental management, security, and continuity. Each has a set of attributes, and there are consistent features across all four. Let's take a look at those consistencies on the next slide. The first consistency component of the infrastructure is capacity and adaptability, the ability to perform and handle growth to meet the business requirements. The second component is availability and flexibility, important as the IT environment is constantly changing, with new demands placed on it with a moment's notice. The third component is visibility and control, probably not one that many people think about, but one that is important to the ability to predict issues and to anticipate and adjust versus experiencing and reacting. And finally, the fourth, maintainability, the ability to ensure the infrastructure can be upgraded, serviced, and repaired on the fly while the systems are running without interruption. All four of these issues are critically important to ensuring the infrastructure is resilient. There are four stages of resiliency that an infrastructure goes through, each building upon the previous. The first is protection, where the focus is on security and hardening. The second phase is avoidance, where the focus is on eliminating the potential for an outage to occur. The third phase is anticipation, where the focus is on gaining insight into the potential for an outage in order to take action ahead of time. And the fourth phase is resilience, where the focus is on adapting to the interruption and continuing business seamlessly. As organizations move along the path from protection to avoidance to anticipation to resilience, many are confirming the critical role the support systems play in the resilience of the infrastructure. Two components, power and cooling, are of increased importance today as changes in technology require more flexibility and adaptability. The dramatic growth in data storage adds more boxes to the data center on a daily basis, with increased power and cooling requirements as never before. The growth of high-density blade servers has driven the per-square-foot power and cooling requirements to levels never seen before and has lessened the response time data center personnel have when an outage occurs. I mentioned before that power has been the leading issue for companies in terms of the reason for declared disasters, and regional events like the Northeast power outage have done a lot to increase the focus on resilience and the need to spend appropriately to ensure you are well-positioned when an outage occurs. In the future, I believe companies will further embrace the resilience strategy and the economies gained by integrating disaster recovery, business continuity, security, and production high availability will be important to improving recoverability while holding the line on cost. In closing, infrastructure management is fast becoming a discipline that all IT organizations are embracing. Once thought to be the role of the building engineers, today's data center managers and business continuity professionals are increasingly aware of and involved with managing the infrastructure to ensure that resiliency is there when we need it.